From Dubois to Uniontown, York to Indiana, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Pennsylvania has a new U.S. congressman and two new state senators. Leo Knepper from the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania is here to report on results of the May primary election. New census estimates are in, and the Pittsburgh metropolitan area has once again seen a population decline. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have an Allegheny Institute report. And following up on the Clean Slate Act, several lawmakers are proposing a Fresh Start law that would remove barriers to securing professional licenses. Anna McCausland of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Leo Knepper in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. The April jobs report is out, and Pennsylvania's unemployment rate has hit another new low. The rate dropped a tenth of a percentage point to 3.8%. At the same time, payrolls hit a record high for the third straight month. The national unemployment rate for April was 3.6%, and the State Department of Labor and Industry says our unemployment rate is in the middle among the 50 states. The Department of Homeland Security now says Pennsylvania's Real ID licensing program is in compliance with federal regulations. The program is designed to combat terrorism and requires the issuance of new driver's licenses. Pennsylvania began issuing Real ID compliant licenses in March. Already, 138,000 have upgraded their licenses. After next October, a Real ID license will be required for, among other things, to board an airplane. Those controversial and likely unconstitutional gun laws passed by the city of Pittsburgh have been put on hold. The laws have been challenged by a number of gun rights groups, prompting the city to agree in court to delay enforcement until the constitutionality of the laws are ruled upon by the courts. That could take some time because, in addition to being a clear violation of the Second Amendment, the laws also run afoul of state laws preventing municipalities from placing restrictions on gun owners. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Voters in the 12th Congressional District, centered around Williamsport, elected a new congressman on Tuesday. Two open seats on the state Senate were filled, and a wide range of nominees were selected for local and state offices, including Superior Court. Leo Knepper from the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania has monitored the results and is here with details. Leo, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Leo, we had only two statewide offices on the ballot in the primary election last Tuesday. It has to do with one of the three appellate courts. For those who may not be familiar, what are the appellate courts in Pennsylvania?
Pennsylvania has three different appellate courts. There is the Supreme Court, which everybody is familiar with, which is essentially the court of last resort in Pennsylvania for civil and criminal cases. We have the Superior Court, which is essentially the appeals court largely for criminal cases. And then we have the final one is the Commonwealth Court, which is largely hears civil case appeals.
So we have these three statewide appellate courts, which means voters in every county, every municipality, all across Penns Woods had an opportunity to vote in this primary. The only races this year were two open seats on the Superior Court, and there were contested primaries in both the Republican and Democrat sides. Who won?
As far as the winners are concerned, Megan McCarthy King and Christy Lee Peck were the winners on the GOP side. On the Democratic side, a gentleman named Daniel McCaffrey and Amanda Green Hawking were the Democratic victors. And on each side of the aisle, there were three people running for the two open seats.
So we now have narrowed that down to two candidates, two nominees of both parties to go head-to-head in the fall election. And let's talk first about the Democrat nominees because they're a whole lot more interesting in a number of ways. I notice I didn't say more qualified. I said more interesting. The lady you mentioned is a labor union attorney, so there's that. Pennsylvania's courts Particularly, the Supreme Court already has been purchased and is a wholly owned subsidiary of organized labor. So I guess they're now going after the Superior Court. But the other candidate, McCafferty, tell us a little bit about some of the very interesting connections he has.
Judge McCafferty's already a judge.
Of the Common Pleas Court in Philadelphia.
Yes, yeah, of the Common Pleas Court in Philadelphia. Thanks. He is the brother of disgraced Supreme Court Justice Seamus McCafferty, who resigned from the Supreme Court in the wake of the email scandal where members of the judiciary were sharing pornographic and lewd images with attorneys via their Supreme Court email accounts.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one kind of interesting connection. Now, you can't necessarily be held completely responsible for the conduct of your brother, but it's just kind of an interesting family connection to the Supreme Court.
Among many.
The other interesting connection that I came across for Justice McCafferty is he actually accepted, and this is just as of May 16th, so he may have gotten more money from them, but he received a $50,000 contribution from the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 98, which some of your listeners may be familiar with as being connected to Johnny Doc, John Dougherty, who is probably one of the most powerful, least known political figures in Pennsylvania, thanks to the political financial heft of the IBEW. And Johnny Doc is under 116 counts of indictments.
Oh, just 116?
Just 116.
And why would Johnny Doc, political power broker, labor union leader of the IBEW, be under indictment 116 counts worth?
A whole variety of reasons, largely resulting from misappropriation of union funds, using money for political purposes or for personal purposes as well that aren't supposed to be used for personal purposes. The IBEW gave quote-unquote scholarships to a former district attorney for Philadelphia. They have thrown money around to races all over the state. Johnny Doc's brother is also on the Supreme Court. And the fact that McCafferty took money from an organization that is under the cloud of whose leader and other head honchos of the organization are under federal indictment really doesn't speak very well to at least his political sensibilities.
And the judge, we will point out, was the endorsed candidate of the statewide Democrat Party for this office. So just connecting all the lines, you have this indicted labor leader slash power broker whose labor union he is in control of, gives $50,000 to the now Democratic nominee for one of Pennsylvania's most powerful courts.
Yeah, and also the court that oversees criminal investigations.
And as you've pointed out, Johnny Doc's brother, also currently a member of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court.
Yeah, and his brother actually received the largest his largest contributor was the IBEW.
And according to the indictment, perhaps a beneficiary of his brother's largesse.
Correct.
Let's talk for a minute about the two Republican candidates who are absent all of this drama. But the two Republican candidates, tell us a bit about them.
The two Republican candidates, they're, I mean, fairly standard judicial candidates. Christy Lee Peck currently is a judge at the county level.
Mm-hmm.
And Megan McCarthy King is in the DA's office in Chester County, I believe.
Yes, yes. So you have an assistant district attorney from Chester County, which for those outside the Philadelphia region is a suburban region to Philadelphia. Christy Lee Peck coming from Cumberland County, which is right across the river from the state capital of Harrisburg. So that sets up the four candidates, and everybody listening who is a registered voter in Pennsylvania will have an opportunity to weigh in on this in the fall. Now, unfortunately, you don't often hear a lot from these candidates because it's very difficult for them to raise money. The media, for whatever reason, does not focus on these races like it does for gubernatorial races or your local state house or senate race. But we would certainly urge our listeners to check out these candidates and to follow what is fully a third of our state government very closely. We are talking with Leo Knepper from the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania. We're going over some of the results from the primary election that occurred a couple of days ago. Leo, in addition to the statewide races, we had a number of special elections, actually more so than usual. Let's start out. We were the home to the only special congressional election in the country last week. This in the 12th congressional district, which is centered in and around Williamsport. Tell us why a special election and what happened.
So the special election was called because Congressman Tom Marino announced his retirement shortly after actually being sworn in for his term, which triggered a special election, as the result of which a couple of candidates were nominated by their respective parties. Gentlemen who the Republicans nominated – this was a Republican seat for folks who aren't familiar with Congressman Marino. The Republicans nominated a representative of the Pennsylvania State House named Fred Keller. And Keller won the seat fairly handily, 68% to 32%, roughly speaking.
Interesting thing about Tom Marino is if you look at the Club for Growth scorecard, you may be more familiar, Leo, with Heritage's scorecard, but at Club for Growth, Tom Marino actually was only at around a 54%. He was not exactly a pro-growth conservative.
No, he definitely was not. And that's actually one of the things that has been very disappointing. Pennsylvania's congressional delegation, the Republicans are not, given how conservative their districts are, really do not well represent the their constituency. Congressman Scott Perry essentially being the only one of them who really lines up very well in terms of his willingness to stick to principles.
Moving over to the state Senate, we had a situation where two incumbent Republican state senators had resigned in midterm, one out in the Indiana County, Indiana Armstrong County area of western Pennsylvania, one in the Franklin Adams County area of south central Pennsylvania. Both are heavily Republican territories, so I would assume the election results mirrored that.
Yes. Yeah. In both of those seats, the Republicans held on by comfortable margins. Senate District 33, which is the one in Franklin and Adams County, was held previously by Senator Alloway, who announced his retirement. The Republican, Doug Mastriano, won 70% of the vote to 30%. Full disclosure, the CAP PAC had endorsed Mastriano in that race and also had done some mailers into the district in support of his candidacy. So we were very excited to see that result.
Yes.
And in Senate District 41, which is Indiana and Armstrong County, largely the retirement was Senator Don White. Joe Pittman was his chief of staff. Pittman won that special election with 65% of the vote.
So we returned to normal in those two districts. There also was a special election for a seat in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, this out in Butler County. Unfortunately, it too came about under auspicious circumstances.
Yeah, this one was not a retirement on good terms. The seat was resigned by Representative Ellis, who had some fairly significant accusations leveled against him with regards to sexual misconduct. And a Republican held that seat. The woman's name was Marcy Mostello. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing the last name correctly,
but you are.
She actually won 57% of the vote. So that was, again, a fairly substantial victory.
Again, we have been talking with Leo Knepper from the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania. And Leo, tell us a little bit about the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania, also what the website is.
Our website is www.empowerpa.org. And largely, we would look at ourselves as an accountability mechanism. What we do is we try and make sure that citizens across the Commonwealth really are informed about what's happening in Harrisburg, in the state capitol, General Assembly, state policy. And through our political action committee, we will support candidates for in primary and in general elections and provide some competition.
And the website?
Is www.empowerpa.org.
Leo Knepper from the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania. Leo, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Loman.
The population of the Pittsburgh area has gotten smaller and the workforce has gotten older. That's what latest census estimates show. Here to talk about the impact of those trends are Eric Montardi and Frank Gamrat with this Allegheny Institute report.
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. With me today, as always, is the Executive Director of the Allegheny Institute, Frank Gamrat. Frank, one of the things that has come out recently in data is the U.S. Census estimates for 2018. And studying our corner of the world, we looked specifically at the metro area, which is Allegheny County, and then six other counties, Beaver, Butler, Fayette, Washington, Westmoreland, and Armstrong counties. And we recently did a piece on the population changes. If you look at the estimates year over year up until around 2013, there was increases from the census population in 2010. And since that time, it's been year over year decreases. So from 2017 to 2018 for the metro area, there was a decrease of 5,540 people. Specifically, that population estimate is made up of the natural increase, which is your birth number of births and the number of deaths compared, and then the net migration, which is basically your international migration plus your domestic migration. So all seven counties, they all had a negative natural increase, meaning there's more deaths than births. Two counties out of the seven, Washington and Butler, had a positive net migration, meaning more people came than left. Allegheny County, which is about 50% of the metro area, lost more people than came from 17 to 18. And this is important because obviously next year we're getting to the 2020 census. And that'll be the official count. We won't be on estimates anymore.
Yeah, these are just estimates.
That'll be quite important. And, you know, tax base and political representation and then economy and labor force. And Frank, that's where your most recent brief on the metro area and on the labor force numbers comes in. And why don't you share with our listeners what you found?
Oh, absolutely. We talk about decreases in population. I think most people just shrug it off as, no big deal. But it is a big deal from an economic standpoint because the population is where you draw your labor force, the working age population. So through the U.S. Census, they have a sub-website called the American Fact Finder. You can look at all the county statistics and get an idea as to where they stand. And, of course, the most recent data is 2017, and they use a five-year moving average to kind of smooth out seasonal effects. So 17 actually takes into account data from 13 to 17 and starts at 2009. And if you look at the population for the Pittsburgh MSA, that's the seven counties of Allegheny, Armstrong, Beaver, Butler, Fayette, Westmoreland, and Washington counties, the population 16 years and over. In 2009, that was 1.93 million folks in our seven-county metro. By 2017, that was 1.95. So it increased a little bit, in 0.84%, just in that working-age population. I mean, not the entire population, which is what your research had covered, but just that working-age population. And one of the interesting parts, if you break that down to the age group, the census breaks it down to 16 to 19-year-olds, their numbers dropped between 2009 and 2017, almost 10%. Whereas the older groups, the 55 to 64-year-olds, they increased 22%, and the 65 to 74-year-olds increased 26%. So the area is getting older. It's getting a little more top-heavy in its population. And so, again, that has a lot of ramifications going forward because in the next 10 years, what is behind the 16 to 19-year-olds, which we'll guess be, 6 to 9-year-olds, eventually they're going to be in that lower rung of the labor force. And this older group, which is growing, they're going to eventually start to leave the labor force, whether it's retirements or natural causes or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So this starts to become a bit of a concern going forward as we try to figure out, okay, who's going to fill the jobs that are coming along? Now, we get into a little bit of detail on our labor force participation numbers. That is, of that population, who is actually in the labor force? And to be in the labor force, you have to be either employed or unemployed. And if you're unemployed, non-institutionalized, that is, you can't be in college or hospital or incarceration. This is civilian labor force, so it does take into account armed forces. So if you're armed forces, you are counted. But you have to be actively looking for work or waiting to start work. So you can't just be sitting on the couch eating bonbons watching Oprah. So, you know, you have to actually be looking for work. So when we look at those, the estimates of those in the labor force, in 2009 it was 1.19 million. And by 2017, 1.22 million. And so the labor force overall grew about 2%, 2.4% more or less. And so again, that's not too bad. The number of available workers is in our area is getting higher. But again, look at the mix of who is in this labor force. Again, it is becoming top heavy. When you look at, again, those 16 and 19 year olds, the number of participating in the labor force fell. It fell 17%. Now, interestingly, so you ask the question, well, why? Is it because at 16 and 19, their families are a little more well off and the kids don't have to work like they once did, so they're choosing not to work? Maybe they're focusing on sports or high school or whatnot, and so they don't feel like they have to work. But again, you look at that older group, specifically that lower rung, that 65 to 74-year age group, they increased in the labor force by 46%. I mean, that's incredible. Now, granted, you're not talking terribly large numbers, you know, 41,000 to 60,000, but it's still a pretty big rate. The older people are staying in the labor force just a little bit longer. And so we looked at even the percentage of the labor force, the share of labor force, the young people, their share is falling. Even if you break it into the two pieces, the 16 to 45 and then, or 44, then 45 on up, you're finding that the younger group is, their share of the labor force is falling. It is an aging labor force. So, you know, again, right now that's fine, but 10 years down the road, what's that going to look like? Especially when the middle group, the prime earners, the 44 to 55 group, they've also come down in numbers as far as being in the labor force. So it really is a bit of an issue that at some point in time is going to need to be addressed.
Was one of the things, you know, we talked about, if we jump back 10 years in time from now or longer, you know, we did this report on Allegheny County's population loss. Right. And, you know, the things pointing to there about quality and cost of living, and then economic factors, good paying jobs. That's what's going to get people to come, get people to stay. And if you look at it then nationally, in what you think of as Pittsburgh's cohort in terms of the metro areas, you know, the only other place that's really losing population year over year in these estimates are the same way as Pittsburgh is Cleveland.
Right.
There's other metro areas, and not all of them are southern. I mean, some of them are other, you know, Rust Belt or Midwest, and they're gaining population as well. So that's something that definitely, you know, has to be looked at.
Well, like you said, it comes down to good paying jobs. You know, what drew people to this area in the first place? And that was the availability of good paying jobs. And you're not seeing that. When you look at the employment statistics, the national growth is like four times higher than the MSA growth. But from 2009 to 2017, employment grew 1% in the Pittsburgh area. Nationally, it was almost 4%. So it is a big difference. We're just not growing the jobs. And part of it is the policies that are out there, this fealty to the unions, this overregulated business climate that we have, the high taxes, is just chasing people away and not encouraging growth.
Frank, for the briefs on population and labor force, we always encourage our listeners to visit our website at www.AlleghenyInstitute.org and follow us on Twitter. For Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi, and this has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
Reforms to the state's professional licensure laws that would remove past minor offenses as a barrier to licensing are now working their way through the state legislature. Anna McCausland of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Last year, President Donald Trump signed into law the First Step Act, one of the most significant reforms to the criminal justice system in decades. If you were at the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference last month, you had the chance to meet Matthew Charles. He was the first person to be given a second chance from prison under the First Step Act and was the president's guest at the State of the Union address. Matthew's past has not been easy. He was in and out of prison and finally was sentenced to 35 years for selling crack cocaine. While in prison, despite all odds, he changed. He was the model prisoner that not only didn't have any disciplinary actions, but also found God, taught prisoners to read, and took college courses. In 2016, he was released after 21 years and continued to live a changed life. Then, after nearly 2 years of freedom, he was rearrested because of a clerical error in his release. Ultimately, he was released on January 3rd, 2019, due to the passage of the First Step Act. Many more than Matthew have already been given a second chance, and there's more to come. This law will save taxpayer dollars, create safer communities by reducing recidivism, and give formerly incarcerated individuals a chance to lawfully provide for their families and themselves through dignified work. But we haven't yet realized its full potential. At a White House event meant to celebrate the law, President Trump pledged to fully fund it. That's a great sign, and the president should be applauded for his commitment to the law's success. Now Congress must ensure this happens through the appropriations process. Congress and the administration must also work together to implement core provisions of the First Step Act, such as instructing the Federal Bureau of Prisons to issue accurate good time credit to those serving sentences. We called for this implementation earlier this year, and it's still a work in progress. Getting the signature on a bill can be the first step in and of itself to ensuring the change actually happens. The First Step Act is the first federal reform in many years to make the criminal justice system less punitive and more redemptive. Now, Congress and the Trump administration can take the next step by ensuring these policies take hold. Our lawmakers and President Trump deserve thanks for passing this legislation. It has the potential to improve countless lives now and in the future. But anything less than full implementation will leave in place unnecessary barriers standing in the way of second chances. Pennsylvania was the first state to pass the Clean Slate Law. This bill, sponsored in the House by Central Pennsylvanian Cheryl DeLosier and Jordan Harris from Philadelphia, seals the records for individuals who have not committed another crime in 10 years. Just like Congress, Pennsylvania's General Assembly can do more to give a second chance to those who need it. Representatives DeLosier and Harris are working together again this session, co-sponsoring a bill that will allow more individuals with a criminal record get back to work. Many professions in Pennsylvania require a license. If you want to be a cosmetologist, did you know you can't obtain that license with a criminal record? Often, people don't understand that they're not eligible for a license until after they've spent the money to go through cosmetology school and all of the training that is required to graduate. That's wrong. Unless you've been convicted of a crime involving your profession, you shouldn't be prevented from practicing a different profession, which is one of the biggest factors of successfully getting your life back on track. Representatives Andrew Lewis and Malcolm Kenyetta, another Central Pennsylvania and Philadelphia legislative partnership, have sponsored a bill called the Fighting Chance Act. It's a regulatory reduction pilot program that would require agencies, including the Bureau of Occupational Affairs and the Board of Probation and Parole, to reduce outdated regulatory requirements by 25% over 3 years. A similar bill enacted in Virginia saw many small businesses and individuals with a criminal record being freed of regulations and able to innovate or get back to work. You can also find out more about these and many other big ideas to help Americans and Pennsylvanians reach their dreams on Twitter at AFP Pennsylvania and on Facebook at facebook.com/fightback. I'm Anna McCausland, Deputy State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, lincolnradiojournal.com and lincolninstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WKFB-AM in Jeanette, WKHB-FM in Irwin, along with WPHB-AM in Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. All of them have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
Thank you.